I'd like to call the meeting around the Property Tax and Local Government Division to order. And I believe today we have Representative Dill in speaking about House File 413.
Staff is going to do a little briefing first.
Oh, excuse me. I believe we have Ms. Dalton today, starting with a presentation on PILT.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Pat Dalton with House Research. Representative Dill's bill does deal with PILT payments, and so Representative Davids asked me to do kind of a brief overview of what are PILT payments. PILT payments are payments in lieu of taxes paid on natural resource land primarily, not exclusively. There are some other payments made, but when we talk about PILT lands and PILT payments, we're really thinking about natural resource land. Within your packet, you have two handouts that I'm going to reference. One of them is a very big handout recently finished by completed by the Department of Natural Resources on payments in lieu of taxes. It's way too long for people to read, but I would refer you to page 3 of that handout. It talks about the different types of natural resource land and how much payments are made for each of the different types of land. But really, the way to think about this land is that there are three basic payment schemes. There are what are called acquired lands, and they are paid either $5.13 per acre or 3/4 of 1% of their appraised value. And then the other two types of land are county-administered natural resource land, which gets payments equal to $1.28 an acre, or to or state-administered natural resource land, which gets paid 64 cents an acre. The other handout I wanted to point out to you is that is a two-page handout. The first page of it has all the acreages in the different of the different types by county, and then the second page actually has the payments by the different types of property by county. I would suggest just focusing on the first page. The first six columns are presenting information on what are called the acquired lands. And as I said, the vast majority of those lands don't get payments on a per acre basis. They actually get most of their payments made on based on a percent of appraised value. So those payments are continuing to grow even though the inflation factor was removed off of the flat per acre payment amounts back in 2011. The lands that are considered other natural resource lands, the loop acres, the DNR administered acres, and the county administered acres, are the ones that are getting those flat payments of either $1.28 per acre or 64 cents per acre. Those ones are flat payments. Those ones no longer are growing because those ones are the ones that are most impacted by the removal of the inflation factor in 2011. And I think that's pretty much all I'm going to say unless anyone has questions.
Questions from members?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Dalton, some nice people from the Township Association popped into my office today, and one of their issues was PILT, as they see land going, particularly from townships, into public ownership. And specifically, they talked about what they were receiving in property tax revenue off that land before it became public and what the PILT payments were, and saying there's a significant drop in revenue to the township. Can you comment at all? Can you shed any light on that for me, please?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, the issue has to do with the fact that the payment is based on a flat percentage of assessed value. And so if the land was paying at a higher tax rate than that percentage. The acquired land could be paying less tax now, receiving less PILT now than what it was receiving in tax rate based. The other thing is the acquired lands actually, there are different formulas for how the money is distributed between the counties, the cities, the townships, the school districts. And so that has an impact. Primarily, PILT payments go to counties and to townships. For some of the land, such as goose management land and the hunting lands, the school districts and special taxing districts also get a share of that. In those specific cases, the money is distributed based on their relative share of the overall tax burden. But if it's not acquired hunting land or it's not goose management land, then the money is distributed on a formula basis, and it may not reflect actually what a county or a town was getting when it was on the tax rolls.
Thank you, Ms. Dalton. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess this is my ignorance of not some of these terms here, I guess. What's the difference between what is it acquired land as opposed to the other natural resources land? What's the difference there? And I guess the other question, what is loop acres, I guess? It's a term I don't know. There are new acronyms that I'm learning on the tax committee.
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson. Acquired natural resource land literally used to mean that. It meant that it was land that had been in private hands, that had been on the tax rolls, and the state either purchased it or received it through gift or condemnation. So it was something that literally we took off the tax rolls. That's not quite entirely true anymore. There's something called CONCON lands, consolidated conservation lands. Most consolidated conservation lands were lands that went tax forfeit back in the 30s. It used to all be considered other natural resource land, but several years ago they moved CONCON lands that have been turned into state parks and things like that into the acquired land category. CONCON lands that are managed as state forests remain in the lower paid acreage, but the ones that have moved into like the state parks are now paid at a higher rate. Loop lands are federally leased lands. I used to know what loop stands for, and I can't think of what it is, and Ms. Schill might remember.
Land utilization project.
Okay, thank you.
But it's federal land that we lease, with land we lease from the federal government, and then we make PILT payments on that.
Yes, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess so. The CONCON lands are lands that were tax forfeited prior to 1930s. What about current tax forfeited lands? I look at my plat book at where my cabin is, and there's tax forfeited lands, county administered lands, and state lands, and federal lands, and then there's private property. And so I guess is that if somebody tax forfeits today, is that still considered CONCON, or is that a different?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, we are starting to go beyond my knowledge of this. Okay. I don't believe those are CONCON lands. I think the CONCON lands really are the lands that were basically what was happening is counties were issuing ditch bonds. They were trying to develop this for agriculture, and then during the Great Depression, all of this land went tax forfeit. Nobody was buying it, and basically the state or the counties took it over at that point.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes, Ms. Gill.
Mr. Chair and members, also, one other item in your packet is a memorandum that I gave to you. It not only outlines some of the high points of the study that Ms. Dalton identified, and there are 80 pages to that study. So there, if you look at the very bottom of my memo, you'll see a cheat sheet on the items that are pertinent for today's discussion, but also attached to that memo is a handy one page, both sides, primer, if you will, on PILT payments. And so under the section that how are the payments determined, there is a definition there for acquired hunting lands and the ConCon lands and the loop lands and all these things that Ms. Dalton has referred to. And then what's really neat, because I'm your fiscal analyst, I like seeing tables, is this cheat sheet for the tables that tells you which kind of lands get assessed, what kinds of rates. And so you can see what's going on there. As Ms. Dalton mentioned, the acquired lands, if you take a look at the total fiscal 11 payment, really command the lion's share of what we pay out in PILT funds. And then the DNR administered, county administered, those, that category is kind of like second and third, and then everything else is of a lesser impact. For a fiscal 11 total payment of just under $26 million, and I see that Ms. Dalton has done the big spreadsheet for you, which is really pretty amazing, but it has every county on there.
And Ms.
Dalton.
Chair, members of the committee, I would like to correct, I actually received this from the Department of Natural Resources late this afternoon. So I really appreciate it. One of the reasons I think this is important to look at is that you are going to see that the types of land owned in different counties varies a lot and varies by types of payments. The loop lands, the DNR lands, and the county administered lands, the other natural resource ones that have the real flat low payments, they tend to be highly concentrated in north central in northeast Minnesota. And when you go through and look at where those acreages are, you're going to see that virtually all of them are kind of up in that area. And so they are the counties that have been most impacted by the removal of the inflation factor.
That's why I'm here.
Any other questions from members? Yes, Mr. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize for coming in late, but the question comes up when you just asked, hence why I'm here. When was the inflation value taken away?
Well, do you want to start the bill hearing, or what is our part? We're just going to keep doing information.
We don't have quorum present, Representative Dill. If you would like to start presenting your bill, we certainly can do that.
Okay, well, the inflation factor was taken off in 11, right? And so there's over 8 million acres of state-owned land in the state. Okay, so anybody that's familiar with my district that extends from near Lake of the Woods all the way to Grand Portage and down to Duluth, that's only 6 million acres. My district is 15,000 square miles, and my district is about 6 million acres. So there's 2 more million acres, Fabian and Erickson's district, that consumes. So, I mean, the state is a huge owner of land, massive.
So we're only doing this for three representatives?
Owner of land across this state. Now, I know. Let's get it in another context. So how much land the state really owns? The state owns 5 Boundary Waters and Voyageurs National Parks combined in the state. So, you know, everybody knows how big the boundary, you know, oh my God, you know, the Boundary Waters, the promised land. And we have a national park in our state that is along the border, and there's about 5 of those it would take to equal the state's lands that are owned. But we're really only here to talk about two different types of where the inflation was frozen in 11.
And excuse me, Representative Dill, I do see we have a quorum present. So I will officially call the meeting to order. Would anybody like to make a motion to approve the February 12 minutes?
So moved.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
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 The motion is adopted and minutes are approved. Representative Dill, would you like to officially move your bill before the division?
I'm like, Mr. Chair, I don't serve on the committee, so you'll have to ask someone on the committee to move the bill.
Thank you. Would any member of the committee like to move Representative Dill's bill?
I'll move House File 413 to be recommended to pass and go to taxes. Where does it go to next?
It sits right here.
Oh, it sits right here.
For possible inclusion.
For possible inclusion, okay.
Report. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to amend that motion if I could, even though I'm not on the committee to be included in the bill.
Nonetheless.
It wasn't, your amendment didn't get here 24 hours in
advance. Oh, God, I'm losing already.
We're both playing by the same rules here, brother.
Nonetheless, we could stagger you with information about this bill. In 2011, it was frozen. It was not right. There's nobody in your legislative district, not one person, whether you own downtown Minneapolis or you own downtown Roseau or you own a farm in Worthington, that's got their property taxes frozen. Not one of you. Anybody, not one single individual, whether you're a nonprofit and pay taxes, it doesn't make any difference. You don't get, how can it be that the state owns bigger than the entire northern part of the state in the state and freeze their own real estate taxes? How is that possibly fair to the counties? St. Louis County alone, just in acquired lands, has over $100 million worth of wealth in that county of property value. Now, just imagine if we went downtown Minneapolis and said, we just froze the property tax value on $100 million worth of downtown Minneapolis land, and you can't get any more money off of it. There would be some excitement over that. So that's the reason these counties are excited over this, because we, the taxpayers that are in those counties that are blessed with all this agricultural land that does the water cleaning for this state, that provides the recreation for this state, snowmobiling, hiking, skiing, and some industry, logging, mining, they all pay taxes, but not the state on their own land. And it was frozen in 2011. Now, my bill is about the cheapest bill you're going to hear in here. Because if you reinstate the inflator, the 2011 payment, it's an increase of around $450,000. And the 13 payment's going to be about $850,000 on those lands. Spread out amongst this entire sheet in unbelievable property wealth. And it just doesn't occur to me that that's fair or right. And not even is it fair. It doesn't even meet the right test. And so that's the reason the bill is before us. And I can tell you that AMC, Association of Counties, I mean, they're jumping up and down about this. The townships came to you, Chair Dabney, and said, you know, they're taking a shellacking on this, particularly when the Lessard Council decides that they want to buy $15 million worth of land along the Mississippi River up in Brainerd, and the value of their payments goes down from the, with Lessard money, the value of their payments goes down, it gets taken off the tax rolls, they get paid these small amounts of money instead. This is just a critical, critical issue, because we still have to provide roads, right-of-ways, just a multitude of services. Emergency services, for example. I mean, when you have in St. Louis County, there's around 950,000 acres of tax forfeit, which pays $1.28. Is that right, Ms. Dalton, for tax forfeit? What's it like around your cabin, Mike, Representative Nelson? But yet, somebody goes out there and goes hunting and gets hurt on that. The county's got expenses. Cities have got expenses. Townships have got expenses because we've got to go out and rescue them. Or they get lost and we have to send out a plane to find them and find their fire in the middle of the night and then send somebody overland to find them. It happens all the time. So, you know, we've got to take a serious look at this as well as many other things in our budget and our state. And, you know, this comes out of Representative Wagenius's budget because it's the payments come, the charge against the budget is in the environment natural resources area, and I serve on that for the last 10 years, and we're going to be, there's going to be a firestorm of people at that hearing when it gets there, if it gets there. If my motion, I sense, didn't prevail, that it would be included in your bill, so I'll use the word if. But, I mean, we've got some real experts here that know this thing backwards and forwards. People, that, commissioner from Lake County that was on the actual work group that was commissioned to study this issue, and I'm sure he could come forward and ask any questions that you have. We've got Mr. Ungaro here from St. Louis County. St. Louis County is wildly blessed with these kinds of land. And so I'd like for, if you have any immediate questions of me, I'd answer them. And I look at Representative Carlson. How many years, Representative Carlson, have you heard about this since you've been here?
Probably since the beginning.
And how many years is that?
41.
41 years. So, I mean, this is a serious thing. So if I'll take any questions, and if you, and then if I have a testifier, and he can come up, and you can ask him questions.
Representative Mahoney.
So I'm kind of having problems following this, and I'm not sure whether you're the one who has to answer it or the chair of this committee. The money is charged to representative to the Environmental Finance Committee, and the chair of this committee is holding over for a possible recommendation to division. And does it have to go to environment, or does it stay in this committee?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Downey.
Representative Mahoney, Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney. Good questions. At this point, I don't believe that Representative Wagenius has asked to see the bill. But Representative Dill is correct. This account was moved out of this committee's jurisdiction to the Environment Committee this year. And so there, we might be in a moment where we still need to work that out. What's the path of this bill and any other bills related to PILT?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
I think it's incumbent upon us to make sure that Representative Wagenius is, and the chair of that committee, is aware so that she gets her say in it. And, you know, I don't know firestorms, but I'm sure there'll be very respectful, long-winded testimony if it gets to that particular committee.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thinking about the prospect for future payments and purchases out of the legacy fund, so I'll ask you, has there been any discussion about the PILT payments also coming out of the legacy fund?
Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Runbeck. Yeah, there has been. In fact, I have had a couple of different proposals before Environment Legacy and Environment Natural Resources Finance regarding endowing from legacy funds, an endowment, so to speak, so that there is revenue ongoing that to give that one-time payment, let's say that you purchased that the property up on the Mississippi River up in, that had a, well, I think it was $14 million ask price on that. Let's say that it sold for that. That then we would estimate what the PILT was for a period of years, make an endowment from the same funds to the county, and that they signed off that they would have no further claim to the state for PILT, but they got the upfront payment, kind of along the lines of the conservation easement idea. And we haven't gotten there yet. But, you know, that's reason, frankly, in these counties where there's a high propensity of land, that the commissioners are here telling you no net gain. They can't afford you. For exactly the same reasons why we're here with just this bill on one small piece of that. Your taxpayers can't afford to have any more public land because it doesn't pay like land that's owned by you and I.
Thank you.
Any further questions from members?
I would like for the commissioner to come up if possible, and you can visit with him. He can give you a little bit of his idea of why we're here and why this is important. And you can, if you would ask him questions, that'd be helpful as well.
Thank you, Representative Dill. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
I'm Rich Spay. I'm a Lake County Commissioner. Thank you for having me up here today. I am also the chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Policy Committee for the Association of Minnesota Counties. And as Representative Dill stated, I was also an active member in the PILT Advisory Group, which was appointed by the DNR.
Thank you. Any questions from members? Yes, Representative Dale.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm just looking at the spreadsheet that you have in your paper, just an example. And their hunting value is $64,490,000, just as an example of the kind of value that's out there in these counties. And so I don't know where we go with this, except that we do the right thing. I mean, I'd like for the commissioner to tell you what it costs to have these lands in their county and to have the prospect of not getting any payments like the rest of his properties pay in his county. Why don't you give that a stat?
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Well, in Lake County, as in many northern counties, we have large percentage of public lands. In Lake County alone, we have 84% of our 1.3 million acres is publicly owned. If it wasn't for the built payments that we receive, the tax burden to property taxpayers would be just astronomical. Or if you want to flip it, it would be impossible for the county to provide adequate services to the public without built revenue. Very much like Representative Dill said, when somebody's lost, we have to send a rescue squad out. We have miles and miles of roads, that forest roads, that need to use these dollars to keep them in a shape that we can transport across. The service part of it is just huge. It makes up a huge part of our annual revenue towards our levy. I think it's important that the bill should be viewed as a starting point. Also, the bill before us, House File 413, we should be working towards a long-term effort to build a program that fairly and equitably compensates local taxpayers for the reduced tax bases that they see. I could just drone on and on about how important PILT is to us, being such a publicly rich land. But it's also, we enjoy having the lands. We do have a no-net gain policy. We feel that 84% is the amount of land we don't want to surpass. But it is, I'm sure many of you have been to Lake County. You've been to our state parks, Gooseberry Falls, Split Rock. You've been to the Boundary Waters. That all goes through our counties. The PILT lands are recreational lands. They are for snowmobiles. They're for ATVs. We have miles and miles of hiking trails. It just goes on and on. And yet the state is the property tax owner of those lands. And what we're asking is that you continue paying that fair share, as Representative Dill stated. With that price inflator gone away, there's going to be, as property taxes, our property values rise, we're going to stay flat. You won't be keeping up with your commitment to pay taxes on those lands.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any questions from members? Yes. Representative Carlson.
I do have to make a minor correction when you asked how long. I did check, and PILT went into law in 1979, so I couldn't go all the way back to the beginning, but almost.
any further testimony, Commissioner Svee?
No. Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members.
Any testimony from the public?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Abney.
As testifiers are assembling, I would like to change the motion before the committee. After consulting with Representative Carlson in his position as Chair of Ways and Means, I would like to make the motion that the bill be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Taxes. And if I may comment on that, on my motion, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Abney.
This is because the account for PILT is in the Environment and Natural Resources and Ag Committee, that that has to be the final destination of this bill to properly account for the costs, the fiscal impact that Representative Dill's bill would create. So again, the motion would be that the that House File 413 be recommended pass and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That'll be my motion then.
That works too, Representative Nelson. Thank you.
Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ken Sewell. I'm General Counsel with the Minnesota Association of Townships. And a lot of what we were going to say has already been said, so I won't echo it, but we are here in strong support of House File 413 as Commissioner Faye said, the starting place for the PILT discussion for the year and as we go forward. This is a critical issue, but if we don't get the inflationary indexing back, at least on this part of the PILT, we fall further and further behind. This bill affects both the county and township payments, and so we are very grateful for that, as opposed to things in the past that have looked only at the county side, which has made the township disparity between county and township payments even worse. So this is an attempt to start building us back up as well. That's why you had township officers venturing into a Minneapolis member's office, and we're happy to adopt a metro legislator. For those who don't know, this is our legislative conference day. We've got about 75 township officers from around the state on the Hill today. So if you see one, say hi, adopt a township, adopt a metro is our theme. Get everybody to know each other. If you haven't seen PILT in your district yet, it's probably coming, because with the goal of DNR acquisitions and legacy fund acquisitions, areas of the state that have not seen state lands will be. That's the idea of providing more and more public access to various areas, and PILT will become an issue in your districts. If it may not be of concern to you right now, in the very near future, it's likely to be, and it's a major concern to our folks already. With me today, I do have Joe Hall, who is a township officer in Marshall County, as well as an assessor who served on the task force, and she has just a couple of quick comments to make.
Thank you, Mr. Sewell. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Jill Hall. I'm a clerk in New Salem Township in Marshall County. I'm also on the board of directors for Minnesota Association of Townships, and I was on the advisory committee that DNR held about PILT. And I talked to my representative, Dan Fabian, I'm sorry, because I wanted to get a comparison of what a private person pays in tax to a township compared to what the township gets from DNR. So this is in Belt Township in Marshall County. And it's the same kind of land as DNR has. It's 40 acres, and it's right next to DNR land, same type of land. Okay, the private owner is paying $1.42 in taxes to the township per acre. Marshall County takes the flat rate as the county choice, is one of seven counties that does that. And the township gets 51 cents. So that's the difference, 142 versus 51 cents per acre. And I'm sure the other townships in the county are relatively about the same. And there's no, the townships, when they did the, townships don't have a choice on the 0.75%. We get the flat rate.
Mr. Chair, if I may just add.
Yes, Mr. Sewell.
That's, again, why the indexing is important, because if we don't have the indexing with the flat rate, as you see, the assessed value will continue. Most years, there will be increase in assessed value, but the flat rate would not change, making that discrepancy larger and larger on our end. So we're already getting only a little over 50% payment already, and if we, without the inflationary number, our percentage continues to drop. And one of the findings of both the Office of Legislative Audit report and the DNR's report that came out now is that while there's a lot of other PILT issues to be resolved, the general consensus is that at the town level, we've got an even bigger problem than at other levels.
Thank you. Ms. Hall, would you like to continue?
Oh, I just thought of a comment. They're talking about, in Marshall County has a wide range. We got, like, from the Red River Valley over to, you know, Russell County. And it's still about one-third of the township is public land. I mean, one-third of the county is public land. So it still has a big impact, maybe not as big as Lake County, but it's still a sizable amount.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Please state your name for the record.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, John Ungaro, Director of Government Relations for St. Louis County and the Arrowhead Counties Association. And I would just like to add a few additional bits of information that have not yet been conveyed to you today. One is that the report that's been referred to that was done during the legislative interim, I served on that group as a as part of the technical work group. And one of the, I believe, five final recommendations that came out of that work group was specifically what this bill does, and that is to restore inflation to the two types of PILT lands that we discussed here, the two lowest PILT payments, the county forest lands and the state forest lands, the flat rate lands. So I just want to make it clear that that came as a recommendation of that advisory committee. Also, when Representative Carlson referenced that he wasn't around when PILT was first, inflation was added, that's correct. We went from 1980, in fact, until the year 2000. So there's 20 years of PILT that where there was no inflation factor added. And the report we did this summer added up that inflationary impact. And PILT payments today would be 81% higher if we had been paying just straight inflation on those lands during that last 20 years. And then finally, I just want to reiterate that from an affordability standpoint, as Representative Dill has stated to you, that the cost is probably one of the least expensive items that the tax committee will see before them this year. And the reason for that is because these lands are primarily forest lands. A lot of them are swamp lands. And they're not the more costly and valuable acquired acre lands like lakeshore lands. You're all familiar with the Vermilion State Park issue from a few years ago. That's an example of acquired acre lands. So, but to put the entire picture into perspective, what we're talking about here, though, from a total acreage of PILT lands in the state, these two types of lands that are before you, PILT lands before you today, they constitute 83% of the total PILT lands in the state. Yet, they only amount to 27% of the payments. And so that is why this particularly makes this a much more affordable item. Obviously, that third category of PILT lands, the acquired acres, I mean, that can run anywhere from a minimum of $5 and 13 cents an acre if you take that flat rate, or if you go to the 0.75%, that can, depending on where in the state that land is located, can get quite a bit more expensive. We had a lot of discussion about that over the summer in the task force, but that is an issue which, because those lands are reappraised only once every 5 years, we didn't feel that we needed to tackle that problem too. We got a couple years yet before we have to come up with a solid policy on that. So this is what we felt was something that was attainable. Obviously, in the dark of the night, over that long weekend when the 2011 special session budget was put together, in these buildings here. This appeared out of nowhere. We don't know how it happened, but it really was going about the wrong way of reining in PILT costs. These two types of lands are no more than straight inflation, using the government index of inflation, the implicit price deflator. Obviously, that third category of land, the acquired acres, that when you have a 0.75% of market value, especially with the rise in real estate prices that we saw during much of the first part of the decade of this century, anyways, the first first decade, there were some significant increases, and that really drove up the overall cost of the PILT program. But what you see before you today, that was not the driver of the cost of that PILT program. And I just wanted to make clear that's the case. Thank you.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I show is that we're going to incur $990,000 additional in 14 and 15. I mean, it's a small amount of money. I don't understand sort of the agitation. I mean, it's described as being a very big loss to counties, and yet it seems like it's minor dollars.
Right, Mr. Chair, and
Mr. Gavaro,
Representative Runbeck, it depends on where. For the counties in northern Minnesota, this can amount to, I think, Couchiching County, it's 39% of their levy plus aid. Lake of the Woods is maybe even be higher. So there are certain counties that really depend on PILT payments. And obviously, over 20 years, if there hasn't been any inflation factor that occurred between 1980 and 2000, that really, really negatively impacts those counties. And I'm not saying every county is that way in the state, but those counties that have 50% or more public, that are 50% or more publicly owned lands, it really starts to add up. And so that's what I'm saying.
Okay. I have one more question, Mr.
Chair.
Yes,
Representative Runbeck.
So I am trying to understand this chart, reading across all these different kinds of payments. Maybe the staff could help, but public hunting payment, non-hunting payment, con payment. And then you have total gross payment column, but it doesn't add up. So why wouldn't it add up?
Ms. Schill.
Members and Representative Runbeck, I believe that what was provided in the overall two-page spreadsheet is tallied by silos, by columns, and not going across. Going across is giving you the comparison of number of acres and the value, and that is, those are bits of information that are used to calculate the payment. If I might, I don't know if this will lend to clarity or confusion, but page 30 of the report gives by county PILT acreage, total acreage of the county, the percent of state-owned land, and then the percent of the PILT payment. So you can see, for example, I think we were looking at Couchiching County. They're getting about 4.5% of the overall PILT payment that the state gives, which is about $26 million. Okay. That is probably more helpful in understanding the position of the commissioner and other testifiers and what this really means for an individual county.
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, I think I actually have a much easier answer for this. There is one column. If you're looking at the second page of the big spreadsheet handout, which is showing the payments,
yes,
one column, non-hunting and other payments, that's a subtotal column. That's subtotaling columns 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. So don't add that seventh column total called non-hunting and other payments. That's a subtotal.
Very good. Thank you. You answered that.
And the reason public hunting payments are separated out from other acquired land payments, if people are wondering, is that for the non-hunting acquired land, each county has to make a decision about how all that land is going to be treated as one. It's either they either pick the $5.33 an acre or they pick the 0.75%. Public hunting land has an alternative payment under a different statute, and so a county can choose to have that land payment on a different basis than the rest of the acquired land. So it can decide that public hunting land is assessed at a higher value, so they'll take the assessed value for that for calculating that payment, and they will take the $5.33 value for the rest of the land if that gives them more money. But that's why those are all separated out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's helpful.
Any further questions from members? Representative Dabney, would you like to? Representative Nelson.
I'll renew my motion that House File 413 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to taxes.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dill.
Well, before you do that motion, I want to tell you that I've served on, not only did I serve as a city administrator for 10 years up there, and I've been here for 11 years, and I've immersed myself in this PILT issue, and I learn something every time I go to a meeting. It's that complicated. And the payments have been changed and rearranged, and counties have taken different options, and the inflator has been frozen, and the values have gone up, and for 20 years there was no increase. And it's just a huge amount of information that you can't possibly learn, because I've been at it 20 years, and I just learned something from Ms. Dalton that I wasn't aware of. So I don't really expect anybody to get the idea of why this works and how it works. It's kind of like the Willy Wonka chocolate factory of taxes. But think of this as you go forward, and when this bill gets to the House floor or wherever it ends up ending, in an omnibus bill or something, when your county gets land that's owned by the state, and it's coming your way, no regardless of where you live, because there's $100 million a year going through the Lessard Council that's headed your direction. Maybe it'll be a piece at a time. This is going to be on your county commissioner's mind, like everybody else. And what part of unfair don't people get? That every private landowner has to pay what the county levies on them, but we don't have, as counties, any way to levy back the state for their land, except through some formula that's concocted by the legislature, and then turned around in a time of crisis, frozen, because you just simply don't have the money. You know, if you simply didn't have the money and you were Representative Carlson in Robbinsdale, after a few years, he'd lose his house, and it'd be sold at public auction, but the counties don't have that opportunity. So this is the reason the bill is here before you.
Yes, Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Dill. This has been a parallel issue that's been uppermost in mind in Hennepin County with regard to the Three Rivers Park system and all of the land that is substantial in some of the outlying communities within the county that lose 10%, 11%, 12% of its entire tax base with no tax capacity. And ironically, we just learned that the LGA formula counts that parcel, although it may be 3,000 acres, as one in terms of the calculation. So I hope that you will support anything that might come forward in the future to fix that problem. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Okay, we will now act on Representative Nelson's renewed motion. Any further discussion on that? Seeing none, all opposed, aye.
Aye.
In favor? In favor?
All in favor.
Aye.
Any opposed?
I thought I might have to take Representative Lean up to the woodshed.
I'll take that in consideration. The motion prevails. The bill will be the motion passes, and the bill will be re-referred to the full House Tax Committee.
Oh. You're doing a good job, Dan.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Hertaus.
That's okay. I, as mayor, wanted to second the motions, too, so it's perfectly okay.
Offer and second. Okay. Representative Dabney, would you like to move your bill, House File 333, before the division?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 333 for possible inclusion in a division report.
Thank you.
Thank you. Members, this is an issue that was brought to me by a constituent. Unfortunately, her work schedule prohibit her from being here today. She pointed out to me that when you file your taxes, you deduct from your income the value of contributions you've made to tax-deferred retirement plans. And staff will catch me on this, but 401ks, 403bs, traditional IRAs, the deferred compensation program that we have access to here, and you are not taxed on that the value of those contributions. They're deducted from your income for calculating your federal adjusted gross income. When you go to apply for the property tax refund program in Minnesota, you add back in those contributions for calculating your income differently. So that has the effect then of reducing your property tax refund, because that is structured as income sensitive. Okay. Although that does, and this is somewhat of the policy question before the committee, that does then serve as a disincentive to individuals to make contributions to retirement programs, because we are in fact negatively impacting them after they make those contributions. Her point, and I appreciate the point, is so we've just counted that those contributions as income in the year you make the contributions. Whatever number of years later that you withdraw those contributions and any growth you've experienced after you've retired, we count it again when you calculate your property tax refund. So we're actually hitting folks twice on the same contribution to tax-deferred retirement programs. She objected to this, arguing that, you know, don't we want to incent people to make these contributions, be more independent in their retirement years, and have a better base of investments. I thought it was a sound argument and have brought this forward. There is a revenue note in your packet. Would have effect in fiscal year 13 of estimated at $9,300,000 and goes up little bits from there. Mr. Hines may have more to add to the committee's understanding.
Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, I think you've covered it pretty well. I don't necessarily have anything to add unless there are questions.
Questions from members? Representative Walther.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm still, you know, sort of thinking this out loud, okay? But, you know, it's a choice to decide to put money into retirement or in a tax advantage plan that isn't available to every employee. But you're choosing to say, I've got enough income, I can meet my household expenses, and choose to put money into a savings plan that is tax advantaged. That's not available to everyone. And I'm wrestling with the fact that in this same section of law, you'll see someone who's unemployed and is hardly making their basic costs with unemployment, you know, it never replaces lost income. They have to add back their unemployment. If they run out of unemployment, and in order to meet the needs of their children, they go on public assistance, which is a maximum of $537 a month, they have to add that back in. And so I'm not sure if we really want to, as a tax policy, if we really want to advantage the person who has been able to meet their living expenses and their daily expenses and more in a way that we don't allow people who are really struggling to do it. And yes, there is, you know, if you set aside money when you're, you know, maybe you're 25 years old, you're out in your first college job, and you don't have any dependents, and life is good, and you've been raised to be a planner. You know, you think hard about the future, and so you say, hey, yeah, I can set aside some of my money into this, and you don't pull it out for 40 years later. Yeah, there is some, you know, and double effect, but you've got, you know, I don't know if this program will exist 40 years from now. So I'm just really kind of wrestling with the equities here particularly when we require people to add back every other source of income that they've got in order to qualify for this. So I'd welcome reaction from the author or others.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Loeffler. We're all thinking out loud here, so that's all right. To your point about these opportunities not being available to everyone, in terms of the choices people make and what they see they're able to afford or are able to afford, you're correct there. In terms of what I heard as an aspect of your argument there, that not everyone has access to a 401k or a 403b or 457 program or the like, contribution, tax deductible contributions to traditional IRAs, which if you're not covered by one of those, you can do, are affected by this. So as well as if you're self-employed, contributions to a self-employed plan, a SEP IRA or a KEO, are also impacted by this policy. So structurally, everyone is able to make these contributions. They may choose or they may experience that they can or cannot, but everyone has access through different structures. I also want to clarify for the committee that the House File 333 is limited to only not including the contributions in the current year when you're making the contributions. You would still count these contributions and any growth you've experienced when you've retired and are making the withdrawals.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Dabney for clarifying that. I still think it's still not available to everyone, because I think someone who's on disability benefits and people who are on these other things, I think you can only do it when you have earned income through a wage or some kind of employment situation. I don't know all the rules, but I mean, I think you're generally right that if it includes your basic IRA, it probably is available to anyone who has earned income. But, you know, obviously these property tax refunds are applied for by people who are also on disability, on, you know, other things in which they wouldn't have an opportunity to save for their future.
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, you make a good, my understanding is similar to yours in terms of the requirement that it be earned income. So I understand your point there.
Any further questions from members? Seeing none, Representative Dabney, would you like to renew your motion?
Actually, Mr. Chair, since we're just holding it over for possible inclusion, I don't believe I need to. We're not taking a vote today.
Very good.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members.
All right. I believe we are adjourned for the day. Thank you.